Miss Lauren Pruitt of Taiga Building Products. Welcome to the WCLBMA podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I appreciate you making time. And I don't know if you remember this, but at the 2022 edition of the in San Diego, the WCLBMA convention, it was like the first gathering. You were one of the first people there. And then everyone was kind of setting up. You saw like twos and threes, like people were kind of separated by 10, 15, 20 feet, getting their first drink in. And I just kind of barged right into your table and I met you and I learned a lot from you just kind of meeting you last year. So I don't know if you remember that, if I made a particularly negative impression then, but.
Not negative, but the hair is hard to forget. So I remember you.
What's left of the fading ginger top. Yeah, that's for sure. But no, I enjoyed meeting you there, and that's part of the value. We'll talk about this in a minute, just coming to these events and meeting people that are smart, are fun to talk to, and you start talking about personally and professionally different aspects of the business and their lives that I think are just enriching. And that's what I get a ton of value from, and you were the first person I met there. So I appreciate you making time for this. Can you tell us just a little bit about your background? Sometimes when I travel to the great state of California, whether it's the South or the North, we get a lot of folks that for some reason grew up in California and have realized they never want to leave. And then I meet someone like you who came from a different place altogether. Maybe tell us just a little bit about where you grew up and how you ended up in California.
So I grew up in South Carolina, was born and raised there, went to school there at the University of South Carolina. I always joked, so my major was advertising, which I don't feel like I use too much besides the fact I write a very good email. But, you know, I ended up moving to Boston with a friend for a couple of years just to kind of experience, you know, leaving the home state. And at the time, so my significant other, he had finished his grad school and moved to California. And so I followed him out here and we've been here ever since. And, you know, we're both pretty outdoorsy folks, so we love it. It's, you know, a state I don't think it's for everyone, but, you know, it's a dream for folks who love hiking and surfing and all that jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've got something in your background. There's a few things in your background that I was very interested to talk to you about. So circa July 2010 to August 2013, if you don't remember what you were doing, I'll remind you, Lauren. You were working for a company called Pyrotechnico, office administration slash pyrotechnician. This is a job no one would ever allow me to have because I'm like one of those adults who's like still like a small child, like a dangerous 12-year-old who still is fascinated by fire. What? Yeah. What were you doing? What was happening in Saluda, South Carolina? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. So that's a town pretty close to my hometown. But so my brother, he is a sales rep for the company. And so they do, I think a lot of people when they think fireworks, they think, you know, the fireworks stands and whatnot. But what they do is they do the big shows. You know, they have contracts with NFL teams, baseball teams, you know, musical artists. Basically, it's just fireworks and special effects. And so typically I kind of split my year doing lifeguarding. And then also I would go, you know, part of the job wasn't as glamorous. You're not always blowing things up.
Okay. That's my picture.
Part of it. Yeah. Sometimes you're loading boxes and, you know, just packing things up to go to the shows. But then you would actually travel and get to do the shows. You know, the summertime is typically the busiest time of year. But yeah, it was a great time. So we would go and, like I said, you would load the show and you would take it and then set it off. A lot of what we did was hand firing. We had the ability to do the, you know, where you're setting it off like electrically to music and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that is what I did.
So lifeguarding. So during the day, saving lives. At night, putting those very same lives at risk in other ways. That sounds like a hell of a summer you had.
It's all about balance.
You know what? There's a bigger lesson in there, Lauren. I think you're right. Well, Lauren, before we move on to, we're talking about dealers, talking about your relationship and where Taiga Building Products adds a lot of value and helps people really think about how they buy, what they buy, pricing volatility and all those sorts of other things. I do want to ask, so you swam competitively in college and you also let it slip just a little bit that you were fascinated with skydiving. Tell me a little bit about both of those, because those struck me as a little bit surprising. I wouldn't see you as just the natural skydiving type of person. So how'd you get into both of those?
So swimming, I grew up, from the age of 5 until 21, 22 in college, swimming competitively. My parents always, they were of the mindset that you don't have to do a particular sport, but you have to do something and stay busy. And for me, that was swimming. So spent a lot of early mornings, late nights, weekends doing that. When I got to college, I wanted to take a little bit of a step back from that. And so I did join a team, maybe not as competitively as I was before, a little bit more low key, okay, but still wanted to stay active. Because that was such a huge part of my life. It still is, maybe not as much anymore, just it's been very busy, but I've done some open water swims and, kind of picking a goal and training for that. Mm-hmm. So less so about racing, but just more that, goal to stay engaged with something and work towards something. And then for skydiving, a friend of mine in high school, his dad was a skydiver. And so growing up, and his dad, being the cool dad he was, he would jump into football games and that kind of thing. And so growing up, I knew I always wanted to do a jump, at least. Like, that was the goal, was just to do one and done.
Okay.
And then our school actually had a skydiving club, and I went to the first meeting and found out they discussed all the other disciplines and things you could do. And the people were pretty great. So I was like, oh, I could do this. So I just started, met the folks and started hanging out with them. We would spend weekends at the drop zone and, doing our jumps and that kind of thing. In college, I didn't jump. I spent a lot of time at the drop zone, not as much jumping because I didn't have a lot of money. But it is a very expensive sport as well, but, really started kind of after college, jumping a little bit more, a few years ago, was on a team that competed at, the national, we were in the intermediate group or in the beginning group, but we were at their national competition essentially for that event.
So you're like jumping out of planes as a team and like doing stuff?
Yes. So the discipline that I was in was called a four-way FS, or formation skydiving.
Okay.
So basically when you're jumping out of the plane, or the goal is you have like these different formations that you're doing. And the night before the competition, it's a randomly drawn event. So you have like three or four, formations to go through, and you just cycle through those as many as possible for the first 30 seconds of leaving the plane.
Okay.
And then you get scored on that. I can send you some videos.
I would say I have so many questions here, and this is where it gets a little dangerous as a podcast host, where sometimes I'm like, we had a plan. We're going to deliver value for dealers and builders. And we talked about skydiving for 2.5 hours. It was weird. I don't know what happened. The time went by quickly. So how many jumps have you made? Do you keep track of that? Or at a certain point you're like, I don't know, it's just a ton.
So I do have more jumps than the average person, but in the world of skydiving, not very many. So I have about 400 jumps, which isn't it.
We should look up what the average is ridiculous. If you just look at the average population, I think they're like me, where I'm like, I went once when I was like 23 and I was like, it was awesome. And then life was a blur. You've jumped out of a plane 400 times?
Yes. Definitely taken off in planes more than landing in them.
I had to walk that through my brain a little bit there. That is amazing.
But like I said, I mean, it's funny in the grand scheme of things. There's folks that I jumped with that have 15,000 jumps and more than that. And so it's kind of crazy. You have these people have been in the sport for 50 years. And so it feels small compared to that. But yes, compared to the average person, I have about 400 times more.
Cool. Yes, I believe so. And just to clarify the economics of jumping here, It's expensive what? Because of jet fuel? Is that the primary cost?
Yeah, so typically what happens when you have your license, so you spend the money to get your license, but then I'd say the gear, it depends on what type of gear you get, but, you know, could be around, I think my first, you know, go like all in was about $5,000 for all my equipment. But then jump tickets. So at the time they were about $24 and now a lot of the drop zones are, I believe it's around like 28 to 30. Right. And yeah, it's primarily for the fuel. You're on a plane with, depending on the type of plane, you could be on a plane with 15 or 20 other people. Mm. It's not luxury airline experience either.
That was not my one experience. It's not. Yeah. Well, and I also think, I mean, somewhere in maybe a longer discussion, there's some parallels to be made when you're buying equipment that will help you jump out of a plane and land successfully. Probably not going to look for the cheapest stuff out there. Let's spend a few extra dollars just to make sure we do this thing right. Let's find the best gear here. And sometimes in our industry, even with some of my friends that I love them to death and they're contractors and they're builders, and still like, why are you not spending another 2% on this when you know the value, the importance of making sure this is, you know, something that's going to live for the next 200 years, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, I'm glad I totally derailed this conversation. This is fascinating. This is why we do it. So let's jump to, pun intended, let's jump over to you. Talk to me about the pricing volatility. You've been buying in a couple different facets for a couple different companies, obviously currently with Taiga Building Products. What has changed since, call it whatever, March of 2020, when we are an industry that really didn't have historically a lot of commodity pricing volatility. And now the question is, after living through significant volatility, this question, will this continue? How have the conversations and the insights and the value changed that you and your sales team, that you guys are delivering to your customers, whether they're single locations that might be doing 10 or 12 million or much larger organizations, how have those conversations been changing and how have you been trying to help them?
Sure. And I guess to start off with the first part of that, like where it came from, I mean, obviously the pandemic brought a lot of problems with it. I mean, namely a lot of shortages. You know, when there were shutdowns, we did have a lot of people leave the industry. And when, even when things kind of came back, those people didn't necessarily come back. And so that's kind of created some issues as far as just having simply enough bodies, whether it's in the mills or harvesting timbers. Mm-hmm. So I would say that was kind of maybe the start of it in the last few years. Obviously, there's been lots of housing shortages. I would say weather issues have been huge. I mean, think about all the wildfires that we've had, I mean, that have kind of gotten exponentially worse in the last few years. And obviously that affects the ability to get timbers too. I think I was reading an article earlier about Canada and it was saying that their current wildfires for this season are up, you know, past 37 million acres at this moment. And then for California, namely 2020, just trying to loop everything together, is that was the worst year on record, over 10 million acres burned in California. So, you know, I think that's for sure caused an issue. And then can't discount the rising interest rates, right? And it doesn't seem, you know, things have slowed, but at the same time, there is still talks about it going up again. So that could kind of perpetuate that issue.
Yeah. So for all our dealers listening, given like all these different challenges, how are you guys kind of helping them to navigate, which is just a different way of doing business?
Sure. I think one of the key things, and obviously I've been here for 2 years, but I feel like communication is at an all-time high. Everyone really wants to hear what's going on, whether it's about projects, whether people are kind of feeling it speeding up or slowing down. So you can kind of help them make those decisions up front. So because we have those relationships with the mills, not that other folks do not have that same relationship, but we're chatting with them every day. We're hearing, are they having difficulties finding timbers? Are they having shutdowns? And we can communicate that with our customers that, hey, you know, that item that used to only take a week to get here, right now it's 3 or 4 weeks out. And just helping them plan a little bit better. So I would say that's one of the key things is just communication, communication, communication lately. And then, you know, obviously as a distributor, you know, we're going to the mills with much larger orders. So we have a little bit more buying power to get them better deals versus if someone was going directly there and say, maybe buying a truck versus, you know, 5 or 6 rail cars of an item. So we're bringing that material in. We can help limit exposure for customers, especially during this, you know, during the pricing volatility. We can help them because we're storing it here a little, you know, absorbing that risk, mm-hmm. and they can buy it more or less just in time. And it's a little bit closer maybe to what the current market rate is.
Okay.
And as far as, you know, we were talking earlier about how business has changed, you know, this was happening before, but I think a lot of folks are starting more programs with vendors, you know, to tie things a little bit closer to whether it's print or, you know, basically having some consistency, even if it's maybe consistency of points on the high end and the low end, but at least they know what that is when they're coming to order from you.
Yeah, that's a really interesting kind of comment. We're seeing more of that. I think companies on either side or throughout kind of the value chain, whether it's a general contractor working with a dealer with a distributor and a manufacturer, whatever that is trying to find creative ways that ultimately allow us to operate as leaders and managers in a way that we feel fit, that best suits like who we are and how we manage. And some people, dude, they like the fact that it's moving up and down and they kind of like the game and they like following along. And I like talking to Lauren and her team. And I like that. Other guys would say, I would sleep better at night knowing that maybe I'm paying a little bit more, but it's going to be more stable and we can figure out a plan. But I do think, just in general, our industry, it's ripe for creativity and new ways of doing things, because something that might be exciting for me and this volatility, I think might create more opportunities, might give other people heart attacks and vice versa. So I think it's really understanding kind of the emotional and rational, logical side of our beings, of the people that we're working with every day. And again, I think those are all really come down to those relationships and how well you know each other on a real kind of human level too.
Yeah, exactly.
So I met you again, kind of back in San Diego here. I know Taiga will be sending people again. Maybe let's kind of just wrap up where we started here. Obviously, where you're located, heading down to San Diego, you're getting on a flight, you're going down there. I know you guys are busy. I know you have a lot going on. Walk me through kind of the value you get when you go to a live event like the WCLBMA annual convention. And maybe just for folks that didn't come to 2022, maybe just share some of your experiences and some of the insights that you got from coming to that event last year.
Sure. I feel like this event really is a good mix of everyone from all aspects of the industry. So one of the things I found of value is, you know, I think you're hearing about everyone and the issues that they're dealing with, because at the end of the day, your issues are my issues in some respect. And so there was tons of smart people, lots of, you know, saying, hey, this is what you're dealing with. This is how we can mitigate that problem. I would say that was the biggest thing for me is, you know, hearing about things that aren't typically in my day to day, maybe not something that I deal with, but there were things that, you know, I could bring back to my company and say, hey, I heard them talking about new forklift regulations. Yeah. Maybe that's something you should check out, or, you know, just all, you know, I thought it was a very well-rounded event as far as the information provided. And there was nothing that I heard that couldn't be applied in some facet of the job.
Yeah. Well, I found it interesting too, is when we heard, like, for that kind of the electric forklifts, I'm in Texas. Obviously we work with kind of clients all over the country. I do feel like I get a little snapshot into the future of the industry, because Texas, on whether it's safety or pollution or stormwater management or whatever it is, all of these regulations, most of them have kind of a little separate California little book of 1,000 pages that's a little bit different. And because it's a little bit more rigorous, but also it's what eventually over time filters down to the rest of the state. So I agree on like some of those things. I was fascinated by some of the stuff we heard that I had never even thought about. And I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Wonder to what degree, as my clients are buying more forklifts or things like that, is this something else that I can just approve and be more knowledgeable about in general? And again, I think being surprised by some of the things that you're going to get value from, let alone, you know, the people you meet.
Yeah.
So Lauren, appreciate you making time. It's great to see you again. And I'm excited to see you and the team down there in San Diego. Again, if you guys have not registered already, now is the time to do that. By the way, Lauren, we've got someone who's got 4 Super Bowl rings, who's going to be talking about leadership, overcoming adversity. He also served in the Vietnam War. He also picked up a few medals there. So I just got done reading his autobiography. So Rocky Blyer is coming, the Steelers kind of legend. And then obviously just from a military standpoint, serving his country, just someone who's incredibly admirable and someone who I knew very little about. And again, when we can come to see a leader talk about this. By the way, he also owns a construction company. So like on so many levels, I'm fascinated to see Rocky speak. So he's going to be there. There's going to be a ton of people. We are expecting the largest turnout ever. And so it's October 18th to 20th. It's back in San Diego. It's the Hard Rock Hotel, which by the way, in that same area we were last year, Lauren, which is like, which is the center of downtown for San Diego, which was amazing. So if you have not already registered, you want to do that now. And Lauren, appreciate you making time. Great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you soon.